Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Chris Hanna joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Still Waiting by Prince. I believe a 19-year-old Prince at the time he recorded it from his eponymous second album. That is not in honor, but in, reference to the Grizzlies and the Grizzlies fans still waiting for Desmond Bane to return.
So you were there last night. Obviously, there's news off the court. The news on the court, the Grizzlies win. They beat Oklahoma City. You wrote about various things. First thoughts on Ja's triple-double. Were you deeply offended that he was hunting for stats at the end of that game?
I was not deeply offended, but I was fine with it. But
you noted it. You did note it.
But he was hunting for it. When you're up 20 with 4 minutes to go and he comes back in the game with four bench players, clearly, like, you know, you're playing to get an assist. That is what you're there for,
right?
Which is fine. He's earned it, and the teammates, I'm sure that everyone else wanted him to get it, and all the fans, all the other players, so that was fine. The weird thing was, I mean, Ja has the sixth triple-double in franchise history. Said the setting the new franchise record, to me, that is not a hallowed mark that he passed of five by a center, Marc Gasol. I mean, that was if anything was inevitable, it was Ja Morant getting the triple-double franchise record. But to me, I mean, the interesting thing about the game is, A, the game wasn't terribly interesting by the standards of, like, you know,
right,
probably a mid-level regular season game in terms of interest. And Ja Morant has the sixth triple-double in his career. And to me, that wasn't even the most interesting thing that happened to the game. That's how interesting the Grizzlies are these days.
Well, and you also pointed out that the play he made when he looked like he was going to dunk it, he cocked it, and then he gives I think that's the play you highlighted, that might be like 22nd on the Ja Morant highlight reel this year.
I didn't specifically highlight that play, but it is the play I had in mind when I wrote that.
Yeah. Okay, yes. It's just another day for Ja Morant.
If Mike Conley had done that, we would have seen that. We would have seen that 50 times in highlights since then. And now it's like, you know, where does this rank on the Ja career highlight list? Number 182 on the Ja Morant career highlight list.
How are you doing on your saving moments for you? Like, did you include that as even? I wouldn't even include it as a moment.
I haven't. I got to go back and get and hit and collect from the last two games before I forget. Thanks for reminding me. I don't know. I feel like that's a good question. Like, what from that game is a contender? Is it that? Is it him getting the steal and then the pass to complete the triple-double? Is it
I don't think it's the dunk to Zaire, although that was nice to see Zaire. That was the gilding the lily on the,
right,
on the triple-double.
Is it, and this is something you only see on TV for the most part. Maybe you saw in the arena if you were a fan, but media, you're busy. Like, is it the post-game interview with Kari?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the holiday season, and when you've got Kari in a little Santa hat doing the gritty with the whole team,
the best moment from
last night was that.
I think that's the top contender for the year-end moments list on that game is the post-game interview.
It is interesting what you see on Twitter. Drew Hill tweeted out I don't know who the fan was who brought Brevin Knight.
Right, right.
Like, that was cute, too.
Yeah.
A Christmas ornament, which is of Brevin looking enraged or whatever from behind. There's so much. I mean, you wrote about so much stuff. There's so much stuff.
I'm going to say you wrote about his stuff. Alone has so much stuff.
Exactly. But with the Grizzlies, there's so much culture. There was with the old incarnation of the Grizzlies too.
Right.
But there's so much stuff. It's a whole world of Grizzly that you're immersed in that makes it. so much fun. Okay, so if Ja's triple-double, historic triple-double, was not the highlight of the game last night, or was not the most notable thing from the game last night, or the most interesting thing from the game last night, what was?
I mean, it might have been. It's just for me, like, in terms of writing or whatever, like, I was struck by just all the little stuff Santiel Damo was doing, and I was struck by the two-way play of Dylan Brooks.
Well, let's take them one at a time. Take Santi first. And we played a highlight of him. It wasn't a three-pointer. It was a long two-pointer, and then immediately the dunk after that. Like, that's his bag, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, he is that. He had the behind-the-back whip pass to Brandon Clark in that game. He had another play we didn't complete where he went up and, like, tried to catch a pass and put it in over his head and just sort of just missed it. And then the three he hit from the corner was, I think he hit a couple of these.
He did.
It was another one of these where you didn't even bring the ball down. You just sort of catch it up top and just flick your wrist up and splash it. He just plays with a lot of flair and a lot of idiosyncrasy. And there's just a lot of interesting stuff in his game. And one of the points I made is that, you know, he's replaced Kyle Anderson. Now that Jaren's back, he's replaced Kyle Anderson in the rotation as the backup power forward, essentially. And he's replaced Kyle Anderson's production. He's also replaced Kyle Anderson as, like, the guy who just does sort of interesting, funky stuff when he plays.
Right now, you'd rather have him as the backup power in that spot in the rotation, given the things he does, you'd rather have him than Kyle, right?
It's an offensive upgrade. It's a defensive downgrade. Like, where that comes out in the wash, like, whatever, it's debatable. But, yeah, I feel great about Santi Aldama in that spot.
And in this spot, like, as a starter, he was a little bit of a stretch. In this spot, it's perfect.
He acquitted himself very well in that starting role. But there's a reason, as I was standing in line getting my coffee a few minutes ago, I checked the NBA site to see, because I was curious whether how far they'd moved up on the defensive standings. I was surprised they moved all the way to 10 after that game. They were not going to be a top 10 defense with Santi Aldama starting at power forward. 5 games into the season, they were the 30th dead last ranked defense in the league.
Incredible.
And now they've gotten Dylan Brooks back. They've gotten Jaren back. They're back in the top 10.
And you said, you tweeted out, for the first time ever,
first time this season. Yeah.
They're in the top 10, both offensively and defensively. What do you think his ceiling is?
Santi? I think Santi could be a starter in the NBA. Maybe not, like, you know, a long-term starter anywhere. But I think over the course of his career, he could have peak seasons where, like, he's starting at power forward for somebody and averaging, you know, 15 points and 7 rebounds and that kind of thing. Like, I don't think he's ever, you know, I think a short time starter putting up those kind of numbers is probably peak
long
Santi.
Term.
We talk about Kyle Anderson. Here's a comp I'll throw out there that I don't think anyone else has used. Santi, the Grizzlies player, the historical Grizzlies player Santi most resembles, and I think he is vaulting past him, is John Lohr. And you could scoff at John Lohr. John Lohr ended up making $50 million playing NBA basketball. He had a 4-year.
He was overpaid, though.
He was, but he did enough that a team signed him to a deal to make him a starter.
Long term, Brandon Clark is, again, you wouldn't want him as your starter, you know?
It's an interesting question, the Aldama Clark thing, because, I mean, they just signed Brandon Clark to this long extension. Santi's playing more minutes than Brandon Clark. Santi's averaging like 25 minutes a season. Brandon Clark's averaging 19. And, like, guess what? You don't have to choose because you got Brandon Clark locked up. You got Steven Adams locked up. You got Jaren locked up. And you got Santi locked up for nothing because he's still on a rookie deal. He's got 2 years left after this one. So whatever. Who cares? You got all of them. But if you were facing a choice, if, like, for some reason Brandon Clark and Santi Aldama are both headed to free agency, that would become an interesting conversation. It's an interesting conversation the Grizzlies do not have to have right now.
His reverse dunks, Rudy Fernandez.
Yeah, we asked him that. This was in the locker room after a game, and Drew ended up writing about it in his game story that night, but I was there too. There was 3 or 4 of us standing there talking to him about it. And we asked him, like, so this reverse dunk thing, where did that come from? And when you ask that kind of question, you expect to hear, oh, I don't know, I'm just playing basketball.
Exactly.
He was like, no, I modeled that after Rudy Fernandez.
He was a good player.
He was a great international player.
Right.
He had a cup of coffee in the NBA for the Portland Trail Blazers and a decent NBA player, but most of his career was international. But he, sure enough, you go back and, like, YouTube search Rudy Fernandez, like, my image of Rudy Fernandez actually was well, it was a reverse dunk, a catch in and dunking over the back of his head. And so, you know, growing up in Spain, watching Spanish basketball, he was inspired by that, and it is a direct emulation of that.
Two-way play of Dylan Brooks. How did it manifest last night? Oh, he also hit by the way a bunch of three pointers last night.
That's the two-way.
Yeah.
I mean, I put the string of numbers out there in the column. There's like a dozen. I strung together a dozen numbers, right? And two of those numbers are under 30, and 10 of them are above 30, 30 and above. And those are the scoring nights of the last 12 games of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And what did the two numbers under 30 have in common? Those are the two times he's played the Memphis Grizzlies. So if his last dozen games, he scored 30 points or more every single game except for the two he's played against the Grizzlies and been guarded by Dylan Brooks.
The numbers are, and you can, his column, I have retweeted it, tweeted it out. You can see it on Twitter. 37, 37, 42, 15, 30, 31, 30, 32, 31, 33, 35, 26.
And the 26 oversells the case because he shot 4-14 from the floor.
Right.
Like he made it all from 17 the line.
17 free throws, yes.
And Dylan only fouled him once.
So Dylan only sent those free throws. He was not sent to the line only by Dylan once. He had 17 points on three throws. And they know each other. They're both Canadians.
Both Canadians. Both, I think, from generally the Toronto area. Dylan said after the game they play pickup ball during the summers. And so, yeah, there's some familiarity there.
The health news. Well, let's start with the return of Zaire Williams. What'd you think?
He looked fine. I mean, my thing, I said this on the pod Drew and I do every week. I sort of made the point of I just give every player a mulligan their first game back from a meaningful injury, like whatever. Just get out there and get some cardio and whatever. And I thought he looked fine. He looked great. I think he didn't shoot well from the floor or whatever, but he was getting rebounds, getting assists. He was active. I thought he looked good.
Well, we almost, when they get to be fully healthy, we'd be essentially going to see nothing of David Roddy and Jake LaRavia.
Well, the question is, are they ever like
fully healthy?
And the answer just may be no. I mean, there would be very few games where you have your top 10.
Right.
You hope you have 8 or 9 of them. That'd be great. And so, I think Roddy and LaRavia are in that, you know, just outside the rotation spot, and that means you play every night, or one of you does. You know, that's just sort of the way it is. But I do think David Roddy is the 11th man in the pecking order right now, but you just haven't had all the other 10.
Are you seeing more progress from David Roddy?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think he's had his last week or two has been much better than what came before. He's starting to make some shots from the corner threes, which is a good sort of starting point to build off of. I think he looks like he's going to be pretty good on offense. My question with David Roddy remains defense, and I know he plays with a lot of physicality and grittiness, but this evidence is still not great that the team defense is very good when he's out there. And so that's what I would watch.
We'll figure out that during the as life goes on. Was Zaire defensively bad last year?
He was early on, and it got better. But it was never – with Zaire, I think with defense you look at what he can be, not what he was. What he was a 20-year-old rail-thin rookie trying to play NBA basketball. But when you look at him, you see the length and the quickness, and you see that he could be good defensively.
And in that way, David Roddy looks – he'll learn much more about guarding in the NBA.
Right.
He's not going to get
taller.
Right.
And you wonder about the foot speed, how much quicker could he get in terms of lateral quickness and staying in front of guys. Yeah.
All right. And then the other news was – I'm not discouraged by it, so to say it was discouraging, but I would have predicted that Desmond Bane would be back in the next 2 weeks, certainly by the end of the year, and so it's kind of not what we wanted to hear that he's going to be reevaluated, and what was the exact thing, 3 to 4 weeks.
The important word, there's a lot of big words in that thing. The most important word is 2 letters long. And it is the word if.
Right.
He will return in 3 or 4 weeks if. The other side of that if is surgery. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. But, like, I mean, when they put that stuff out there, it should be read closely. They're not saying he's going to be back in 3 or 4 weeks. They're saying he's going to be back in 3 or 4 weeks if blah, blah, blah.
Well,
so the if is very important.
Okay, so do you think, because anytime they put out such a statement, it's obviously we will reevaluate. And anytime you're reevaluating, things could go any direction from the reevaluate. No, they never say someone will definitely be back in 4 weeks. They never say that. They always say,
No, that's not true. They said that on Zaire Williams. If you look at Zaire Williams' injury thing when it came out, he didn't say.
At first, it didn't say.
There was no reevaluation. He said he'll be back in 3 or 4 weeks.
Huh. Because Jaren's reevaluated. Most injuries are reevaluated.
This is more.
You found there more uncertainty in this.
They also added a word that had not been there before that was more specific about the nature of the injury, the scimatoid or whatever, which was not there before. This is a very real.
Oh, this is a bigger if.
This is 100% a bigger if. Now, I think they believe that he's going to be back in 3 or 4 weeks. And if they believe that, I believe that because their track record is very good.
Right.
And there's never been a sense, and this is not always true throughout Grizzlies history. With this front office, I've never felt like I've been misled even behind the scenes on injury right. stuff. So I think they think he's going to be back in 3 or 4 weeks. And so I think he's probably going to be back in 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm not trying to be alarmist, but I'm just for the sake of being like, you know, seeing clearly the entire game field of play. The word if is in there for a reason.
Right. So, yes, they said if there is a positive response is what the
right.
– if there's a positive response when he's given – it is amazing, these words. They're starting the reloading protocol.
Right.
And if there's a positive response, then a return to injury within 3 to 4 weeks.
Right.
Do we know – did you, like, look up what the hell that injury is? The scimatoid, whatever the hell it is.
Someone else did, and I saw people tweeting stuff about it. I am not – because I wasn't writing a story specifically about that. It's some part of the structure of your toe, some linkage thing. I mean, again, when they say there's – the one thing they're not clear about is they use the word injury. The toe thing is a sprain. Right, do you have it in front of you, the actual language?
I can get the actual language.
Because the toe thing is a sprain, but then they use the word injury at some point, and injury is vague. Like, you know, injury is not, you know – bruise or fracture or like whatever, right? Injury is vague.
All right, here's the medical update. Upon reevaluation, Desmond Bain is progressing. You can stop me at any point in his rehabilitation from a right big toe sprain and sesamoid injury.
So big toe sprain
and sesamoid injury.
Sesamoid injury. Sprain is specific. Injury is vague.
And has been
these are cleared, two different things.
Right, and has been cleared to begin a gradual reloading protocol. If the toe responds positively to the reloading protocol, a return to play is projected in 3 weeks.
Right. So the unspoken there part, the unspoken part of that is, okay, well, what if it doesn't? What if it doesn't respond positively? And so that's what we're dealing with here.
Well, I didn't also know that the I guess when I read it. Even then, I thought, well, if it's not, that will be 6 weeks or 8 weeks. But you think the if could be, and again, we're not trying to be alarmist here, the if could be.
I think that's in the range of possible. That's certainly not likely. That is not likely. The Grizzlies think he's going to be back in 3 or 4 weeks. I believe that he'll be back in 3 or 4 weeks. But I'm not going to come out and say, well, I guess he'll be back in 3 weeks. That's not what it says. I read these things closely.
Right. Yes. Okay. And by the way, just for people, so you know. To understand sesamoid injuries in the foot, it's important to know what sesamoids are. A sesamoid is a bone embedded in a tendon. Sesamoids are found in several joints in the body. In the normal foot, the sesamoids are two P-shaped bones located in the ball of the foot beneath the big toe joint.
Right.
Acting as a pulley for tendons, the sesamoids help the big toe move normally and provide leverage when the big toe pushes off during walking and running. And then it says types of sesamoid injuries. One of the types of injuries, there's three types.
Right.
Is turf toe.
And all we get is injury. So we don't know what that means.
Right. One is turf toe. This is an injury of the soft tissue surrounding the big toe joint, blah, blah, blah. One is fracture, and it can either be acute or chronic. Acute fracture caused by trauma, chronic, produces long-standing pain in the ball of the foot, blah, blah. Or it could be, and I never thought we'd be talking about this, sesamoiditis.
It could be
sesamoiditis. That is an overuse injury involving chronic inflammation of the sesamoid bones. Okay, then it goes on to say, I'm not going to say, non-surgical treatment. Here we go, last one. When is surgery needed? Oddly, Desmond Bain is, no, it's not. It says when sesamoid injuries fail to respond to non-surgical treatment, surgery may be required. The foot and ankle surgeon will determine the type of procedure that is best suited to the individual patient.
When fails to respond, may be needed.
Yeah.
So we have two. We have a when and a may. And a may. And we're hoping the when, we don't deal with the when because it responds.
God.
And if it doesn't respond, and then what happens? Then, you know, maybe, maybe not. So this is, there's a range of things that are possible here. And I just want to be cognizant of that range. But the Grizzlies think he'll be back in 3 or 4 weeks, and I think that's probably what's going to happen.
The you pointed out in the piece today that as long as they got 3 of the 4, not including Steven Adams, 3 of the 4 other guys, they're good.
They've been 13-4 with 3 of the 4. I also think that if you're going to have, if you can only have 3 of the 4, I think this is actually the right 3, which is not to say that like Dylan Brooks or Jaren Jackson are better than Desmond Bane. But when you think about your team, I think you need Dylan and Jaren to guarantee high-level defense. You need them both
right.
to guarantee high-level defense. I think Ja just guarantees. I mean, you need Bane to have great offense with Ja,
right.
but like Ja is like a one-man offense by himself. And so, like, if you only have 3 to get by, that's probably the right 3. I think your ceiling needs Desmond there, too, because that really boosts. If you want to be, like, top 5 on both sides of the ball, you need.
You think that's a better 3 to have than Des, Ja, and Jaren?
Maybe. This has not been tested that well. Maybe. I think the interaction of Dylan on ball and Jaren, you know, guarding the rim and as a helper.
Is potent.
It's that synergy is what guarantees your elite defense. And I don't think it's quite as strong when you take one of those two components out. Whereas I think you put some NBA players with John Morant, like, he's just, you know, you're going to score. But whatever. I mean, I think the Grizzlies right. have been and will continue to be, like, really, really good, like, top of the conference
right.
good. Even without Desmond Bane, if they're mostly healthy otherwise. That's the problem, is the mostly healthy otherwise. Right now you look up and like, okay, right. you got everybody now except for Desmond Bane and like Danny Green or whatever. Well, what happens is suddenly you look up and like, you know, Dylan Brooks has sprained an ankle
right.
and he's out 2 weeks plus you know, two other guys, you know, that's what you got to worry about. You have less margin for error.
The Pelicans lead the West now. Shocking.
Surprising. I continue to doubt, and they continue to flaunt my doubts, and we'll see.
I mean,
see
not a big surprise. Like, they beat Detroit last night, but Phoenix got run by
Boston. Yeah. No, I mean New Orleans, you know, when I say the Grizzlies are now top 10 on both sides of the ball, they're not the only one. Boston is, Phoenix is, Cleveland is, and New Orleans is. That's 5 teams.
Wait, Boston is, Cleveland is, Phoenix is, and New Orleans is. Milwaukee is not.
Their offense is not quite there. And they played without Chris Middleton
right.
most of the season.
Yeah, so that's certainly intriguing that New Orleans is ahead in the West. By the way, as you think about, like I think about the standings and the Grizzlies as they stack up against the other Western Conference teams. At some point in the maturation of the franchise, you look at how they stack up against Boston and Milwaukee.
Right.
Boston's playing without Robert Williams yet. They're playing without Al Horford right now.
Right.
Are they demonstrating? Like,
Boston really did a number on the Grizzlies last season. The thing about Boston is, like, you got Marcus Smart to put on Ja, which is, like, if you pick any player in the
right.
league, you want to try to guard Ja
right.
in the playoff series. Like, the reigning defensive player of the year who's a guard,
right.
that's probably
Might
the guy. You got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and, like, Dylan Brooks can only guard one of those two guys.
Right.
So you got two really long wings averaging 25 to 30 points a game. It's hard to guard them both. Boston's just really good. I mean, I think Boston and Milwaukee are to me, are head and shoulders, step above everyone else. So, you know, you should be so fortunate to get to the finals and be the underdog against Boston or Milwaukee.
We're not there yet. Do you have any opinion, by the way, on the, as this show was winding up yesterday, the news broke that that MLGNW is rejected the long-term contract with the Tennessee Valley Authority and so we'll be continuing with the TVA, but not on this long-term deal. I honestly read the stories. I didn't think about it or study it enough to know. The idea of locking ourselves into a long-term deal with TVA seemed crazy to me. Like, you want leverage and you want whatever. But is that something that you followed or have any opinion on?
I'm not studied up enough to express opinions on that.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Chris, thank you very much. You can read the piece over at the Daily Memphis.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.